excusez-moi, mais il parle de portugais, mais le français, c'est pas.
Muito boa tarde a todos, caras e caras colegas. Saúdo de uma forma muito especial o Sr. Comissário Didier Reynders, que temos o prazer de ter mais uma vez no nosso Parlamento. É um gosto receber um político com a experiência do Comissário Reynders, que foi várias vezes ministro, vice-primeiro-ministro, parlamentar, e que tem na Comissão uma pasta de grande relevância. Portanto, agradeço por isso a sua presença mais uma vez entre nós e vamos dar início rapidamente à nossa reunião. Estão deputados das duas comissões, de Assuntos Europeus e da Primeira Comissão, Assuntos Constitucionais, Direitos, Liberdades e Garantias, cuja vice-presidente me ajudará na condução desta reunião. E, portanto, sem mais delongas, todos conhecem as regras do jogo. Nós temos uma grelha de tempos que permita-me que uma grelha de tempos que permite ao Sr. Comissário fazer uma breve intervenção inicial de 10 minutos e cada um dos grupos parlamentares disporá de 3 minutos para colocar as suas questões, após o que o Sr. Comissário responderá no final da sessão. Portanto, não constata a presença de nenhum deputado independente, portanto, se estivessem, teriam direito a 2 minutos, estando apenas grupos parlamentares, serão, portanto, 3 minutos cada um. Portanto, Sr. Comissário, é com todo o prazer que lhe dou a palavra.
Obrigado. Thank you, Chair, and ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure to be with you again, if I may, because during the pandemic it was more by video that we had many meetings with the National Parliament. But it's a pleasure to be in person with you to exchange, first of all, on the situation of the rule of law in the EU, and more specifically, if I may, in my introduction, in Portugal. You know that in 2020, after the publication of the first rule of law report, we had the chance to exchange virtually, and again, I'm happy that for this exercise we are all in the same, on the same room. The rule of law is of the utmost importance for the Commission. The European Union, in fact, is based on the rule of law, and respect for these values guarantees the protection of all other values, including democracy and fundamental rights. And faced with Russia's military aggression against Ukraine, we need to underline even more how crucially important the rule of law is. In July last year, the Commission published its third annual rule of law report, and the 2022 report includes, for the first time, recommendations to all the Member States. They aim to support Member States in their efforts to take forward reforms and encourage positive developments, and you have a specific role, of course, in the reform process with different laws that it's needed to adopt to fulfill all the requirements of the rule of law report, but also to improve the situation in the country. Let me now present the main findings of the country chapter for Portugal of the 2022 report. For Portugal, like for all the Member States, the Commission looks at four areas which are key for the rule of law: the independence, quality and efficiency of the justice system, the anti-corruption framework, media pluralism and media freedom, and other institutional checks and balances. Regarding the justice system, the report takes note that the government is taking a series of measures to address efficiency challenges. Similarly, there are efforts to address the issue of the deficit of human resources. The Commission is aware that the deficit of non-judicial court staff may require further action. As recalled in our report, according to European standards, a sufficient number of appropriately qualified support staff should be allocated to the courts. This would also be essential to ensure that the measures that Portugal is preparing to improve the efficiency of the justice system have the expected results. Steps are also being taken to strengthen the transparency of allocation of cases in courts, and we take good note that the necessary implementing regulation has been recently adopted. It is important to continue the efforts in all these areas, and the Commission has addressed recommendations to Portugal in this regard. And when I'm speaking about human resources, of course, I'm speaking also about budgetary resources and digitalization of the justice system. The Commission has also recommended to Portugal to finalize the legislative framework regulating the High Council for Administrative and Tax Courts. We note positively that this legislation is being prepared. This will be an important step to ensure the autonomy of the High Council. And finally, the report also highlights that investment in the digitalization of the justice system continues. This is also being addressed in the context of the Portuguese Recovery and Resilience Plan. With respect to the anti-corruption framework, the second pillar of the report, we note that the National Anti-Corruption Strategy is being implemented. However, the anti-corruption mechanism established in 2021 is not yet fully operational. We are aware that there are efforts ongoing to ensure its operationalization in line with the recommendation addressed by the Commission. The report also mentions that while the legislative framework to fight corruption has been reinforced, concerns remain regarding the lack of resources for the prevention, investigation, and prosecution of corruption-related cases. And we take note that there are efforts in this regard, in particular with the reinforcement of the anti-corruption teams of the criminal police. The report also highlights that the system of assets declaration has been amended to extend and strengthen the obligations on political and senior public office holders. However, the transparency entity established in 2019 to monitor and verify these declaratory obligations is still not operational. The Commission has recommended that its operationalization should be ensured. And the Commission is aware that some progress has been made in this regard. We hope that the operationalization can take place as announced by the authorities in the first semester of this year, of 2023. We'll continue to follow the development in this regard in the forthcoming rule of law report, because again, it's very important to pass new laws and to organize reforms through the legislative process. But when you have a beautiful paper, the most important element is the implementation. The implementation is of the essence, always enough resources and with a good functioning in the full independence of different bodies, not only in the justice system, but in the different bodies involved in the fight against corruption. Regarding media pluralism and freedom, the report highlights that Portugal has a solid legislative framework safeguarding the work of journalists, as well as guarantees of independence of the public service media provider. The Commission is also aware that concerns of stakeholders regarding the impact on the freedom of expression of Article 6 of the Portuguese Charter of Human Rights in the digital age were swiftly addressed, which is a development to be welcomed. However, the rule of law report also takes note of issues regarding the lack of resources, again, of the media regulator and of the public service media provider, RTP. Concerns also remain regarding the precariousness of the journalistic profession. And you know that we have issued recommendations to the member states to organize the protection of journalists after not only violences against journalists in different member states, we have said we have seen some murders in different member states, but also harassment on the internet, but also some pressure coming from declarations from officials or from different kind of other people. So it's very important to try also to implement those recommendations. And regarding the system of checks and balances, the report takes note that new measures are being implemented to improve the transparency of lawmaking and the quality of legislation. These are positive developments, again, which the Commission recommends to pursue. The report also mentions that the emergency measures adopted in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic were subject to scrutiny. There are reflections on the need for a new legal basis for the adoption of emergency measures. We are aware that this is one of the many topics debated in the context of the ongoing revision of the Constitution. And finally, the report mentions that the civil society space continues to be considered open, while challenges remain related to access to funding, to financing. The Commission, I said, is currently preparing the next edition of the report to be published in July, normally on the 5th of July. The country visit to Portugal took place in February, and the Commission is grateful for the good cooperation with the Portuguese authorities in the preparation report, as in previous years. I'm particularly pleased that in this context it was possible to meet with the services of the Assembly of the Republic. The Commission has always emphasized the importance of parliamentary oversight in the national system on checks and balances. The 2023 edition of the report will particularly focus on the follow-up given to the recommendations addressed to member states in the previous report. And I want to say that, of course, we try to organize more and more debates at the national level with all the stakeholders, public authorities, but also civil society, about the different recommendations, to discuss about the best ways to implement the recommendations of our reports. And ladies and gentlemen, to conclude, let me encourage you to continue your work to foster the debate on the rule of law and to help us develop a real culture of the rule of law culture across the European Union. I know that Portugal is very aware of the importance of democracy, fundamental rights, and the rule of law. The Portuguese people had to endure the longest dictatorship in Europe in the 20th century. Your country knows that the rule of law has a direct impact on people's daily lives. With the rule of law report, we have a common European basis to discuss the rule of law situation across the continent. We can and we will keep the rule of law high on the political agenda. Let me assure you that the Commission will continue to play its part as guardian of the treaties and use all the tools at its disposal to react to threats to the rule of law whenever necessary. I want just to add that, of course, since the beginning of the Russian aggression against Ukraine, we have tried also to add some goals in our policy. The first one, it's in relation with the rule of law and the justice systems. We want to be sure that it will be possible to bring the perpetrators of all international crimes to justice, and we are working on it with many different partners. And we want also to be sure that Russia will pay for the reconstruction of Ukraine and the reparation of damages caused by the aggression. And to that, you know that we are working on the sanctions to freeze assets of oligarchs and entities. And I'm very pleased to see that it was possible to work with Portugal on this, because we have till now 24 billion of euro of frozen assets in Europe. In Portugal, it's 25 million. And I'm hoping that we continue to work on it. And I want just, because I know that you have discussions in the Parliament about that, I want just to add that it's very important also to pay attention to the different ways that we have used in some member states in the past to give the nationality to some sometimes oligarchs, and maybe to use some golden visa schemes to provide also some possibility to come to the European Union for some oligarchs. I know that you have stopped in Portugal to organize applications for Russian people and Belarusian people, but it's maybe better to continue to work on the legislative proposal that you have in your hand to stop the process for the future and to pay attention to the existing situation, because we need to be very strict about the application of the sanctions. But that's that I want to add, due to the exceptional situation that we are living in, because you know that we'll work in the same way on the rule of law, also with the candidate countries, and one of the most important now, with the Western Balkans and with Moldova, is Ukraine, of course, and we want to continue to work also with Ukraine on the promotion of the rule of law in the country. So thank you very much, and I will listen to your comments and your remarks. Thank you.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Comissário. Aproveito para o felicitar pela excelente iniciativa da Comissão e sob sua responsabilidade da publicação anual dos relatórios sobre o Estado de Direito, que nas duas edições precedentes mereceram um amplo análise e debate do nosso Parlamento, e aguardamos com expectativa a publicação do terceiro relatório, que, como o Sr. Comissário acaba de referir, estará disponível em julho. Daremos então agora a palavra aos diferentes grupos parlamentares. Começaria pela Sra. Comissária Romualda Fernandes, em representação do Grupo Parlamentar do Partido Socialista. Peço que compreendam que não poderei ter a mesma tolerância que tive com o Sr. Comissário, porque temos trabalhos parlamentares às três incontornáveis. Sra. Deputada, faz favor.
Muito obrigada, Sr. Presidente. Começo por cumprimentar calorosamente o Sr. Comissário Didier Reiner, em nome da bancada do Partido Socialista, agradecer as informações que nos trouxe e dizer que tomamos uma boa nota de todas elas. Queremos começar por dizer que encaramos a proteção do Estado de Direito como prioridade nacional e europeia. Sendo um dos valores fundamentais da União Europeia, o Estado de Direito constitui garante da segurança jurídica, paz social e boa governação, e assuntos que de grande importância para a confiança dos cidadãos. Portugal sempre apoiou e continua a apoiar todos os mecanismos de diálogo entre a Comissão, o Conselho, o Parlamento Europeu, juntamente com os Estados-membros, os parlamentos nacionais, a sociedade civil e outras partes interessadas no Estado de Direito. Diálogos como este que estamos a ter neste momento são muito importantes para identificar os desafios, prevenir o surgimento de novos problemas e o agravamento dos já existentes. No recente debate sobre o relatório sobre o Estado de Direito, que o Sr. Comissário aqui referiu, pôde-se constatar que Portugal tem feito muitos esforços e assume um forte compromisso em implementar todas as recomendações que lhe foram dirigidas, nomeadamente a adoção da Estratégia Nacional de Combate à Corrupção, um Mecanismo Nacional de Combate à Corrupção que, nomeadamente, tem como função um caráter preventivo de garantir a aplicação mais eficaz e uniforme dos mecanismos legais, de promover a articulação entre instituições públicas e privadas, melhorar o conhecimento, a formação e as práticas institucionais em matéria de transparência e integridade. Também, já se referiu também, o reforço dos mecanismos nos tribunais administrativos e fiscais, o recurso à arbitragem e reforços em recursos humanos. Reconhecemos que ainda existe um longo caminho a percorrer, mas garantimos que continuará a ser feito de forma intransigente um acompanhamento destas matérias que inquinam o Estado de Direito e o próprio prestígio dos Estados. É um processo em construção permanente, nunca pode ser dado por garantido, sobretudo tendo em conta o crescimento de movimentos populistas de extremas direitas na Europa que põem em causa o Estado democrático. Pelo que questiono de que forma a justiça em todos os Estados-membros da União Europeia está, neste momento, preparada para os ataques ao Estado de Direito e à proteção democrática. Eu termino por aqui e muito obrigada.
Muito obrigado, Sra. Deputada Romualda Fernandes. Darei agora, com todo o gosto, a palavra à Sra. Deputada Mónica Quintela, em representação do Grupo Parlamentar do PSD, Partido Social Democrata.
Obrigado, Sr. Presidente. A quem cumprimento, cumprimento os Srs. Presidentes das Comissões desta audição.
Desculpa. A nossa grelha permite a resposta imediata e não no final, como tem acontecido noutras vezes. Peço desculpa e agradeço à Sra. Vice-Presidente por ter alertado para o facto. Portanto, Sr. Comissário, peço por favor que...
Obrigado.
Responda à primeira intervenção.
We have the different processes also in the European Parliament, so I'm open to report to respond to all the interventions, one by one or globally. But thanks for your commitment and dedication about the rule of law and the reforms. I want just to explain two elements in answer to your remarks. First one, it's true that there are different kind of very positive efforts in Portugal to pass different legislative reforms. But as I said in my introductory remarks, it's important to have the legislative reforms, then the implementation, and for the implementation, what we are looking for is the resources given to the different bodies, the justice system, but also the bodies involved in the fight against corruption, or the regulatory body for the media, and then the independence of those different bodies, the justice system, but also the different actors in the fight against corruption, or the media regulator that it's very important to have. But after that, if I'm looking to the fight against corruption, to be very concrete, it's also important to have a track record. So to see how it's possible to go to a final decision before a tribunal or a court. And we have seen, and we have said that in the report, that for complex cases in Portugal, it's very long. And it's maybe too long before to go to a final decision in justice. And that gave a strange perception also in the population, and the perception is an important part of the trust of the citizens in the justice system and in the different bodies involved in the fight against corruption. So again, I know that there are some changes in the procedures to try to solve that, but it's very important to try not only to pass the new laws, to implement those laws, but also to be sure that also for complex cases, it's possible to go to a final decision in justice. And then how it's possible to work together with the EU institutions. I would say the rule of law report is the assessment of the Commission. After many consultations, and it's possible to find in the report what is needed to do following the Commission to improve the rule of law in the EU, because we have sent recommendations to all the participants. But there is a very good collaboration with all the institutions. We discussed that in the Council, in the General Affairs Council, in the Justice Council. We discussed that in the European Parliament. But we are taking into account many rulings, many decisions of the European Court of Justice in Luxembourg and the European Court of Human Rights also in Strasbourg. And you know that we tried to organize the accession of the EU to the European Convention for Human Rights. It's very important. It's an obligation for the Lisbon Treaty. So I will say here, it's a real obligation to do that. But more than that, to be very concrete and to conclude, it's very important to show that there is a good cooperation between the national authorities in the judiciary and the European actors. I mean, a very good collaboration for the police authorities with Europol. If there are complex investigations, don't hesitate to work with Europol. A good collaboration with Eurojust, our agency for the judicial cooperation, again, for some complex cases. And since just less than 2 years, if it's possible, a good cooperation with the European Public Prosecutor Office. I know that we are in the process now to replace the prosecutor, the Portuguese prosecutor in Luxembourg, but if I may, I want to insist on the fact that it's important to reinforce the number, to increase the number of European delegate prosecutors also in Portugal due to the number of cases that we have, and to have the most fluent cooperation between the Prosecutor General and the European Public Prosecutor Office, because we are very concrete about the collaboration. That's also very important. It's a new institution, but it's very important to show that we are working together at the national level with the European Public Prosecutor Office.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Comissário. Agora sim, é a vez de dar a palavra à Sra. Deputada Mónica Quintela. Eu peço desculpa pelo meu lapso, mas com a comissária anterior que tivemos aqui na semana passada, a grelha, de facto, era diferente. Sra. Deputada, tem a palavra.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. A quem cumprimento, cumprimento o Sr. Presidente da Primeira Comissão, Srs. E Srs. Deputados. Sr. Comissário Didier Reynders, é um gosto enorme tê-lo aqui. O currículo que o Sr. Comissário tem é um orgulho para quem está ao serviço da justiça. Nenhuma luta nos pode convocar tanto como a luta pelo Estado de Direito democrático, pelos direitos fundamentais, pelos direitos, liberdades e garantias. Essa é uma luta que temos que estar todos unidos. E nesta luta por estes direitos e pelo Estado de Direito está necessariamente incluída a luta contra o combate à corrupção. Sabemos que a corrupção mina as democracias, destrói a percepção e a confiança que as pessoas têm nas instituições. E por isso é necessário que sejam implementadas medidas que possam combater este autêntico flagelo. Vi que na proposta de diretiva na COM 2023-234, relativa à luta contra a corrupção, prevê-se, e muito bem, que seja feito ações profiláticas de sensibilização e estudo para que as pessoas se habituem a conviver e a viver de acordo com as normas da integridade, de acordo do viver com o direito, e para repudiarem atitudes e atos corruptivos. E estamos absolutamente de acordo. Prevê-se também, e aqui confesso que fiquei sem perceber muito bem e gostaria que o Sr. Comissário nos explicasse, porque a diretiva fala na adoção de um único ato jurídico para que todas as infrações e sanções em matéria de corrupção, harmonizando as tipificações das infrações penais objeto de ações judiciais por corrupção, de forma a que pudessem abarcar todo o tipo de crimes. No fundo, como se pudesse estar, por exemplo, a corrupção por ato lícito, a corrupção para ato ilícito, o branqueamento de capitais, o tráfico de influências, como tudo isso pudesse estar num só tipo legal de crime. Eu não sei se é isto que a diretiva propõe e gostava que o Sr. Comissário nos esclarecesse, porque é importante como é que vamos densificar todos estes tipos legais de crime que têm condutas, que são preenchidos com condutas diferentes. O que é que a Comissão tem em mente relativamente a isto? Vi com muita atenção que faz o relatório e que o Sr. Comissário conhece bem a realidade de Portugal. Efetivamente, é muito importante termos boas leis, e Portugal tem excelentes leis. Ao nível legislativo, Portugal tem excelentes leis, mas tem uma péssima aplicação, uma péssima execução dessas leis. O Estado de Direito aqui poderá, melhor, a aplicação da justiça estará em perigo. Porquê? Os tribunais administrativos e fiscais, não obstante, enfim, as últimas medidas que possam ter sido feitas, têm atrasos de 15, 20 anos. Os cidadãos é normal estarem à espera de uma decisão 15, 20 anos. Isto não é justiça, é denegação de justiça. Isto é impedir o acesso à justiça. Os processos criminais, como o Sr. Comissário referiu muito bem, muitas vezes prescrevem porque as investigações, os crimes são complexos e as investigações são muito morosas e há falta de meios. A questão em concreto é efetivamente porque há falta de meios. Por outro lado, e não querendo esgotar o meu tempo, portanto temos estas preocupações com a questão da aplicação da justiça, não posso aqui deixar de dizer que neste momento foi aprovada uma lei das associações públicas profissionais que amordaça a advocacia. Os advogados são o baluarte dos direitos, liberdades e garantias, são quem representa o cidadão, são a defesa do cidadão. Os advogados têm que ser livres e independentes. E neste momento há uma lei que procura regulamentar e procura controlar a ordem dos advogados, pondo inclusive que a ação disciplinar esteja dependente, possa estar dependente dos serviços dos funcionários públicos do Estado. E eu pergunto-lhe como é que o Sr. Comissário, porque isto tem preocupado muito o Estado de Direito, preocupa os advogados, preocupa o cidadão, como é que o Sr. Comissário, pergunto-lhe se tem conhecimento desta lei, da forma como a ordem dos advogados está a ser amordaçada, do que se pretende fazer e como é que vê estas medidas. Muito obrigado pela tolerância por ter ultrapassado o meu tempo. Obrigado.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Comissário. Sei que as perguntas são complexas, mas o tempo começa a esgotar-se-nos. Peço que respeite os 3 minutos.
Thank you again, I want to insist on some points because you have insisted on the fight against corruption very concretely, awareness about the rules. First of all, I tried to develop, I said, a culture of the rule of law, and in many occasions we have organized conference and discussions on the rule of law, and at the end of the day, the main common is education. We need to do something about education for the young generations and so on. And so I've tried to ask to organize maybe a meeting with the ministers of education at the EU level to see how it's possible to, again, implement that in the program and not just to say it's important. That's about the awareness for the next generations in Europe about the fundamental rights, democracy, rule of law, and all those actions. Then we work on prevention. Of course, it's very important also for corruption. It's the reason why you have seen that we insist in different chapters, in different member states, about different rules like the transparency, of course, but declaration of assets, register for lobbying, and other kind of different mechanisms to be sure that it's possible to prevent the corruption case. Then the most important is to organize also investigations, prosecutions, and trials. And for that, it's true that we have presented at the beginning of this month some new ideas about the corruption strategy, and the ideas are, again, to try to harmonize different situations. First of all, the definition of the criminal offenses, because we have seen that there are some criminal offenses that are present in some legislations in different member states, but not in others. And so we want to discuss with the member states and with the parliament to see if it's not needed to harmonize the situation and to have the same reference about the criminal offense. And certainly because also there are more and more cross-border situations with different events in different member states. It's the reason why I insist on the Open Public Prosecutor Office, but also between the different justice systems, it's important to exchange, and it's easier to do that if we have the same kind of definitions for the different criminal offenses. The same for the penalties. We need to show to the citizens that we are taking seriously those criminal offenses with the high level of penalties in all the member states and not with huge differences from one to the other. But of course, we'll have a discussion about that. We are not coming with a strict vision on this, but it's very important to try to be very comprehensive about the different kind of criminal offenses related to corruption and with the level of penalties with a certain high level of penalties. Then you repeat what I've said and others about the difference between the beautiful laws and the implementation. It's true. But just to give you an example, it's a general situation in quite all the member states. If you look to the digitalization, it was quite easy since maybe more than 20 years to organize the digitalization of the tax administrations, but not of the justice system. In many member states, we have seen huge progress in the tax administration to collect the revenues for the state, and not so much progress in the justice system. So we need to invest more in digitalization. But the same in human resources, the same in the salaries, and so that's an important step forward if we want to make progress. But to answer also to your remarks about the criminal procedures, we have seen, we'll publish in some weeks for the next Justice Council beginning of June, we'll publish the Justice Scoreboard. And you will see some progress in Portugal about the average of the period of time to go to a decision in criminal case in general. But for the complex cases, it's too long. And we have repeated that, and so it's needed to take initiatives to try to reduce that. And my last remark, it's about the checks and balances, the possible legislation on the disciplinary for the lawyers. Of course, we are in discussion with the bar associations, not only in Portugal, at the European level, to see how it's possible to put emphasis on the lawyers and the bar associations in the fourth chapter of the report, because we want to be sure there's a protection of the independence, again, of the lawyers and of their relations with their clients. And that's an important discussion that we have to develop. Also, the disciplinary regime. So I don't want to go further because it's an ongoing process in Portugal, but we are in discussion not only here about that because we want to be very protective for the lawyers.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Comissário. Darei agora a palavra ao Sr. Deputado Bruno Nunes, do Grupo Parlamentar do Partido Chega. Tem a palavra, Sr. Colega.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente, Sr. Presidente, Sra. Vice-Presidente da Primeira Comissão, Sr. Comissário. Já falámos aqui hoje de situações relacionadas com corrupção, de mais transparência, a transparência inclusive dos titulares de cargos públicos. Temos algumas perguntas concretas, apesar do reduzido tempo. Falou de um maior escrutínio e falou no escrutínio que era necessário em relação à gestão da pandemia. Na sua tutela está a Procuradoria Europeia. Nós temos tido alguma dificuldade em Portugal em obter algumas informações que creio que, aproveitando a sua presença, podem ser importantes. Existem esclarecimentos que têm sido pedidos para apurar por parte da Procuradoria Europeia em relação aos contratos celebrados pela Sra. Ursula von der Leyen e o CEO da Pfizer, nomeadamente estes contratos em concreto, que continuam a ser cedidos ao Parlamento Português de forma truncada, e que sabemos que as informações que temos através dos mídia é que as solicitações feitas pela Procuradoria Europeia também não obtiveram resposta, nomeadamente naquilo que se refere a uma pré-negociação que existiu relativo a estes contratos. Estes contratos ditaram que Portugal ficasse honorado com mais de 100 milhões de euros de compras de vacinas, que nos últimos dias sabemos que mais de 3,5 milhões dessas doses foram deitadas para o lixo por ultrapassarem o prazo de validade. Achamos que é importante, por uma questão de transparência, que seja esclarecido e saber se nos pode ajudar nesta situação de maior esclarecimento, visto que junto do Governo Português temos tido dificuldade no escrutínio. Em relação à nomeação de cargo para Procurador Europeu, também temos tido em Portugal uma situação que não chegamos ainda a um consenso, porque Portugal ainda não apresentou os seus 3 candidatos finais a esta Assembleia, de forma a garantir que não tenhamos uma situação idêntica àquilo que temos em relação ao Tribunal de Contas Europeu, que continuamos sem um representante português, e neste momento, em relação ao Procurador Europeu, temos uma situação algo caricata, até na questão da transparência, da celeridade da justiça, em que um dos candidatos apresentados estava, de facto, envolvido num processo de alegada corrupção e de favorecimento pessoal e de abuso de poder por parte de um ex-primeiro-ministro português detido em 2014 e que, entretanto, ainda não foi sequer julgado, o que tem demonstrado, de facto, que alguns processos demoram muito em Portugal. Um dos candidatos era claramente um dos juízes envolvidos em todo este processo. Perceber de que medida é que esta falta de nomeação e de indicação do nome por parte de Portugal fragiliza a imagem de Portugal dentro deste processo. Uma pergunta muito rápida em relação ao ChatGPT e perceber qual o futuro do ChatGPT e, enquanto comissário, como é que vê a forma de proteção de toda a Europa e de todos os concidadãos e cidadãos europeus. E depois perceber também outro dos motivos que nos vai embaraçando nesta Assembleia da República, é a questão de até hoje não termos conseguido fazer uma transposição clara da questão da diretiva comunitária relativa aos metadados. Já são muitos anos em que esta situação se vai arrastando. A forma como a transposição estava a ser feita tornava-se inconstitucional e daí também a origem de uma revisão constitucional, não só por esse motivo, mas que estamos a fazer a revisão constitucional neste momento. Mas de que forma é que o facto de não termos a transposição da diretiva comunitária feita pode estar a prejudicar algumas situações de investigação com os parceiros europeus? Falando, para terminar, desta questão dos parceiros europeus, e obrigado pela tolerância, Sr. Presidente, mesmo para terminar, como é que vê nesta questão de maior transparência e separação de poderes o facto de, desde outubro de 2022, o gabinete da Interpol e da Europol em Portugal estarem sob a dependência direta do Primeiro-Ministro português? Se considera ou não que esta dependência hierárquica é um caminho perigoso que se está a tomar na democracia portuguesa? Obrigado.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Deputado. Darei a palavra ao Sr. Presidente. Volto a chamar a atenção que estamos cada vez mais condicionados, admito por minha culpa por ter sido excessivamente tolerante, mas peço a vossa colaboração.
I will try to be brief, Chair, because there are many questions. First of all, about the Open Public Prosecutor Office, it's the best demonstration that we have an independent body. You have repeated yourself, it was an announcement by the Chief Prosecutor, Laura Kövesi, that she took the decision to start investigations about the contract related to the vaccines. And of course, if you want to have more explanations about the procedure, you need to ask that to the Chief Prosecutor herself, because I don't have any information, of course, about the content of the different investigations. It's logical. We ask the member states to organize the independence of the prosecutor office at the EU level. We are able to organize a full respect for such an independence. And so, of course, they work on different dossiers like this one. What we try to do is to give them more and more tools and resources, like I've said, for the Portuguese authorities. So if you look to the evolution of the budget of the EPPO, it was with a huge positive evolution since the beginning of our discussions. The same for the staff and the same for the digitalization with the new case management system. But of course, about the content of the investigation, I don't know where they are, but Laura Covesi, it's open to come to different national parliaments too to explain not maybe the content of the decision or the procedure that is her responsibility, but to explain what they are doing more in general. But I don't have more details about that, except that there was an announcement about a possible investigation. About the designation of the new prosecutor in Luxembourg for Portugal, I have insisted this morning again with the Minister of Justice, of course, on the necessity to provide us three names for three candidates. I know that there are discussions with the High Council for the Judiciary and the Council with the prosecutors at the Prosecutor Council about that, but we want to receive three candidates and to try to organize the selection process at the EU level. To don't repeat discussions that we have had, you know, at the beginning of the Portuguese presidency with the previous selection. But it's very important, and I insist on the fact also that it's important to increase the number of European delegate prosecutors in Portugal. There is a request to do that. There are four European delegate prosecutors from the beginning, and the idea was to double the number to have four additional. About ChatGPT, two things. First of all, there are already some investigations concerning the application of the GDPR, because of course that's the first element, data protection. You have seen maybe that in Italy it was possible to take a decision by the independent data protection authority due to the fact that there were no enough safeguards about the way to organize data retention with all the data collected, and with maybe problems about the consent for the retention of the data, and also due to the difficulty to understand the rules about the children. They have said there's no access for the children of less maybe than 13 years old, but with what kind of mechanism to protect that? And so there were action. For the rest, we are in discussion now with the Council and the Parliament about artificial intelligence, and of course there we'll have to take into account the evolution in the AI Act, and for my portfolio in the AI civil liability directive that you are putting forward. About the transpositions, just to say that, of course, it's a problem if there's a lack of transposition. It's the reason why we introduce a lot of infringement proceedings before the Court of Justice, when we are sure that there is a real problem with the lack of transposition, but I don't have precise information about the specific situation that you have described, but I've proposed many times to the Commission, of course, to introduce infringement proceedings where there is a lack of transposition. And then the last question was about Interpol or Europol, because I've listened with the translation Interpol, because Interpol is not a European institution, it's an international one, and so I don't want to... But Europol too? No, it's Interpol, I'm sure. Interpol. But Interpol, unfortunately, it's not in the hand of the open institutions, but it's true that we try also to work with different independent bodies, but you know, it's a police organization. It's not a judicial organization. But again, I don't have more precise information about that because Interpol is not a European body. The European body is Europol, and there you know that we are working with an independent organization inside the agency.
Thank you. Comissário, darei agora a palavra à senhora deputada Patrícia Gil Vaz, do Partido Iniciativa Liberal. Tem a palavra, senhora deputada.
Obrigada, senhor Presidente. Cumprimentar também a senhora Presidente da Primeira Comissão, todos os senhores deputados e os serviços. Sr. Comissário, muito obrigada por estar aqui a transmitir uns conhecimentos e contributos que com certeza serão muito úteis para aquele que será o nosso trabalho parlamentar. Vou-lhe fazer perguntas muito concretas e as primeiras têm a ver com o relatório 2022 sobre o Estado de Direito relativo a Portugal, onde é referido que subsistem preocupações quanto à falta de recursos para a prevenção, investigação e ação penal de processos que estejam relacionados com a corrupção, nomeadamente nos casos de corrupção de alto nível. É também referido nesse mesmo relatório que, e passo a citar, estão em curso medidas para lidar com o facto de a Entidade para a Transparência, criada em 2019 para controlar e verificar estas obrigações declarativas, ainda não estar em funcionamento. Face a isto, gostaria então de endereçar as seguintes perguntas. Em primeiro, se a Comissão Europeia tem conhecimento das notícias relativas à possível prescrição de casos judiciais relativos à corrupção, nomeadamente envolvendo o ex-primeiro-ministro português José Sócrates? Qual é a posição da Comissão Europeia relativamente à prescrição de casos judiciais relativos à corrupção, a verificar-se a hipótese de existir a prescrição de casos relativos à corrupção? A Comissão Europeia irá fazer constar esses mesmos factos nos relatórios de Estado de Direito para 2023. Perguntar também se a Comissão Europeia tem conhecimento que o governo português demorou mais de 558 dias para regulamentar a distribuição eletrónica de processos em todos os tribunais do nosso país e se a Comissão Europeia vai mencionar esse facto no relatório de Estado do Direito de 2023. Por outro lado, e fazendo um enquadramento, há cerca de um mês o Tribunal Constitucional afirmou em comunicado oficial que está há alguns meses a aguardar a resposta do Governo acerca da instalação física da Entidade para a Transparência. Perguntar se a Comissão Europeia tem conhecimento deste facto, se a Entidade da Transparência não for instalada até ao final do presente ano, se a Comissão Europeia vai fazer menção desse mesmo facto no relatório de Estado para 2023 e, por último, se vai a Comissão Europeia fazer menção no relatório de Estado do Direito para 2023 que os atrasos relativos à instalação da Entidade para a Transparência se devem à demora do Governo português, tal como foi afirmado em comunicado oficial pelo Tribunal Constitucional. Obrigada.
Muito obrigado, Sra. Deputada, e dou de imediato a palavra ao Sr. Comissário.
Obrigado. I want just to repeat, of course, that implementation is of the essence. And so what you repeat about the way to implement different reforms, it was we are looking at in the new report. So in the 2023 report, we'll assess the implementation of the recommendations put in the report of last year. And so it's true that we will have some comments. I don't want to explain which one in the report that we'll publish in July. Second element, we have seen some efforts to increase human resource, just to give an example, in the criminal police, and maybe to have more people in charge of some investigations. But on a general note, if you look to the report of last year, we took note that reforms to the system of criminal procedure were adopted to allow for a more timely treatment of complex criminal cases, including with regard to possible change to the current organization and structure of the Central Instruction Court. But now again, it's very important to use those tools to accelerate maybe the process, certainly about different complex cases. I don't want to comment on a specific or individual case, but we want to be sure that for complex cases, it's possible to go faster. And moreover, we have recommended to Portugal to continue the effort to strengthen the transparency of allocation of cases in courts, because we are aware that the lack of implementing regulation in this area led also to some delays. And so it's not enough to say that we want to change the system of allocation of cases. It's very important to be effective in the implementation, and we take note positively that the implementing regulation has been recently adopted about the case allocation system. So what we ask about those complex cases is a real possibility to go to a final decision, to have investigations, prosecutions, and then a decision before a tribunal or a court, and not to stay for a long period of time with many risks, like you have described at the end, but to stay for a long period of time without a clear decision in justice. And maybe one of the ideas is not to put all the different elements in one very complex case, but to try to have different kind of specific case and to be able to go faster to justice. And again, about the transparency entity is the same problem of implementation. We want to be sure, after some years now, that it will be possible to have a real independent entity with enough resources to deliver. And you know, declaration of assets is the first element that we are putting into place in many different member states or third countries when we discuss about the accession process, to try to prevent different dossiers of corruption. So again, implementation of the essence. But you will see in the report that there are some improvement, it's true, more resources given to different kind of bodies like the criminal police, but we continue to think that there is a problem with the complex cases and the too long procedure for those cases.
Muito obrigado, Comissário. E darei agora a palavra à deputada Inês Sousa Real, do Partido PAN, Partido de Animais, Pessoas, Animais e Natureza.
Muito obrigada, Sr. Presidente. Cumprimento também o Sr. Comissário, agradecendo a sua presença, bem como todos os esclarecimentos que teve já a bondade de nos prestar. Nós, analisando o relatório e as recomendações sobre a justiça em Portugal, o Sr. Comissário tinha referido, e bem, que seria necessário um sistema judiciário mais transparente. Concordamos em absoluto. Há passos que sabemos que ainda estão por dar, nomeadamente a instalação da entidade para a transparência, mas também houve já algumas alterações legislativas que reconhecemos que foram positivas, nomeadamente as que visam assegurar o reforço dos recursos humanos adequados ao sistema de justiça, incluindo ao nível do Conselho Superior dos Tribunais Administrativos e Fiscais, e que vai abrir a porta a um significativo reforço de meios e à assessoria técnica dos tribunais administrativos. Mas sabemos que há também uma autorização legislativa para alterar os tribunais administrativos e fiscais, nomeadamente o Estatuto dos Tribunais Administrativos e Fiscais, que pode melhorar a eficiência e a celeridade dos tribunais administrativos com a sua reorganização, mas no nosso entender há alguns aspectos que não foram incluídos e que nos parece importante até para uma posterior avaliação que sejam considerados. Uma delas é a necessidade de assegurarmos a transparência das decisões judiciais de primeira instância, que no nosso país ainda não tem uma obrigatoriedade de divulgação, mas o GRECO e o Grupo de Trabalho para a Justiça Administrativa e Fiscal recomendaram esta medida, não só como forma de garantir a transparência, mas também porque o pleno acesso à jurisprudência dos tribunais administrativos e fiscais é uma condição indispensável para que certas faculdades processuais possam ser exercidas, como é o caso das decisões preferidas em oposição à jurisprudência uniformizada pelo Supremo Tribunal Administrativo, e gostaríamos de saber a sua opinião sobre isso. Por último, a questão que gostaríamos também de colocar, bem sei que já falou em alguma medida da inteligência artificial, mas em Portugal o Pessoas, Animais e Natureza, o nosso partido, propôs a criação de um grupo de trabalho multidisciplinar que vise precisamente regulamentar o acesso ao ChatGPT. Inclusivamente utilizámos o recurso a esta ferramenta para a criação deste projeto de resolução que recomendou ao Governo a criação desta equipa. Parece-nos que as decisões que temos assistido lá fora, inclusive em Itália, sem passarem por este processo de avaliação, poderão ser precipitadas para fazer uma análise mais correta de riscos e benefícios da sua utilização, e gostaríamos também de perceber qual o caminho que acha que na utilização da justiça este instrumento poderá ter. Muito obrigada.
Muito obrigado, Senhora Deputada. E sem perda de tempo, Senhor Comissário, tem a palavra.
Obrigado, Chair. Just to say that again about transparency in general, if you look to the justice system, I want to insist on one point I've mentioned in my remarks, but also in the reactions to some questions, is the system for the allocation of cases. It must be transparent, and it must be without any influence on the allocation of cases. And because it's a question of course, trust of the citizens, and maybe the businesses too, for some kind of procedures, in the justice system. You need to know that there is no interference in the allocation of cases. And I was very pleased to see that now we have such a possibility to implement the new system. The same for the transparency entity for transparency or transparency entity, because again, if we are going to a full implementation, it will be possible to organize a real verification of the asset declarations. And it's an important element in the prevention of the fight of the corruption. And maybe sometimes it's a very good instrument also to try to push pressure on some officials to be align on the rules that we try to promote. But it's not so new. If you look to the discussions that Portugal have had, like many other member states, with the Council of Europe, and in the Council of Europe with one specific body, the GRECO, you have received many recommendations from the GRECO, and you will see that they are not so far from all recommendations. We are working on the same process about the transparency process. But it's true that in the justice system, I tried to explain that with the example of the allocation of cases, or in the fight against corruption, transparency is the first element. But we need to have a real verification of this. It's the reason why we insist on the full operationalization of both the mechanism and the transparency entity if we want to make progress. Then on AI, it's a good idea to try to have a working group with different people coming from different universe and with different expertise. We try to do the same at the EU level. It's the reason why I said we are working for the first time in the world with a new framework for the digitalization, for the digital evolution that we have seen. The Digital Services Act, the Digital Markets Act, but now we are working on the Data Act and AI Act, and I said myself on the AI Civil Liability Directive, because it's very important to try to understand better what is it and what are the rules. But again, if you are working on AI, take care to ask to all the providers of AI services that they ever saw, they try also to put into place a full respect of the GDPR, because that's the regulation about the data protection. And it's not because you are going to new applications with AI that you don't have to have a full respect for the GDPR and the protection of the personal data. And I don't want to repeat, I gave the example of Italy. It's an independent decision, but the decision in Italy was taken just on the basis of the GDPR, the protection of the personal data. And it's very important also in AI, because you know AI is using a lot of personal data to train the system. They are working with learning machines, and they are learning on the basis of many data. But we need to be sure that the way to collect the data is in full compliance with the GDPR, with the consent of the citizens, and the retention of data is also in full compliance with the GDPR and the ruling of the Open Court of Justice.
Obrigado, Sr. Comissário. E para uma última intervenção, dou a palavra com todo o prazer ao Sr. Deputado Rui Tavares, do Partido Livre.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Boa tarde a todos e a todas. Uma saudação especial ao Comissário Reinders. Trabalhámos juntos na altura da presidência belga, em 2010, para tentar fechar o regulamento do Fundo Europeu de Refugiados na sua terceira versão, e tentar uma coisa que ainda não se conseguiu verdadeiramente, que é um programa europeu conjunto de reinstalação de refugiados. Mas hoje aquilo que eu lhe queria perguntar é um tema que então foi muito caro no grupo dos Verdes Europeus e que agora está no seu portfólio, que é o tema do Estado de Direito. Apesar dos esforços do Parlamento e da Comissão Europeia, na verdade, há passos decisivos que não foram dados na defesa do Estado de Direito na União Europeia. Uma das ideias centrais seria a de podermos ter, dentro da União Europeia, uma instituição que fizesse o trabalho equivalente ao que faz a Comissão de Veneza no Conselho da Europa. Muitos Estados-membros, quando esta ideia surgiu em primeiro lugar, reagiram dizendo que isso é um tema para o Conselho da Europa. Acho que está cada vez mais claro que o Estado de Direito é um tema central da União Europeia e até no quadro do alargamento é uma das reformas essenciais. Há duas formas que nós temos de fazer uma Comissão de Veneza, eu chamar-lhe uma Comissão de Copenhaga, ou seja, para assegurar a continuidade dos critérios de Copenhaga dentro da União, para o futuro. Uma delas seria, através de um acordo interinstitucional, poderia contar com o Parlamento e a Comissão, ou, eventualmente, podemos sempre sonhar com o Parlamento, a Comissão e o Conselho, para criar uma comissão de sábios que tenha como função carregar no botão de alarme quando há razões de alarme. No fundo, é parecido com aquilo que na presidência portuguesa de 2000 se fez em relação à Áustria, em que, na altura, se nomeou um comitê de peritos que foi à Áustria. Outra forma seria criar, a partir das próprias instituições, nomeadamente Supremos Tribunais e Tribunais Constitucionais dos Estados-membros. E assim evitaríamos a crítica de que se trata de um conselho lá longe, em Bruxelas, a aplicar a sua regra única a todos os Estados-membros. Eu creio que há aí caminho para fazer e que até tribunais constitucionais, como o português, tendo em conta que foi com o Tratado de Lisboa que a Carta Europeia dos Direitos Fundamentais ganhou uma força equivalente à dos tratados, poderiam fazer um trabalho de rede entre esses tribunais. Eu queria perguntar-lhe se a Comissão Europeia não pode fazer, desse ponto de vista, ter um papel catalisador em relação àquilo que os tribunais supremos e tribunais constitucionais podem fazer para que criemos uma Comissão de Copenhaga dentro da União Europeia. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado, deputado Rui Tavares. Senhor Comissário, tem a palavra.
So there are many ideas around the rule of law. I want just to insist on the fact that what we are doing is to come with a rule of law report. The rule of law report is the own assessment of the Commission as guardian of the treaties. Of course, if it's not enough to engage a dialogue with the Member States on the basis of the rule of law report, we are using other tools. We are using the infringement proceedings before the Court of Justice, and sometimes you have seen that maybe in the case of Poland it was possible to obtain a fine of 1 million euro per day, and now 500,000 with some reforms to push pressure on the country about the disciplinary regime of the judge. If it's not enough, now we are using some financial instruments, the recovery and resilience plan, with some milestones on the rule of law, the independence of the judiciary, to give an example. Or we are using the new conditionality regulation, like it was possible to do with Hungary about the fight against corruption, and we are in the process about that. So, and on the top, we have the Article 7 with long procedure. So we are using a different set of tools. So at the end, it's possible to work with the European Commission, with all the institutions, but the European Commission, and also the European Court of Justice, because you spoke about the Supreme Court, is the highest court in Europe, and with the capacity to impose the primacy of the EU law and to verify the full implementation of the EU law. You mentioned the Venice Commission. We are working with the Venice Commission. You know that for all the reform, we ask to the Member States to have full respect for the recommendations of the Venice Commission, like I said for the Greco in relation with corruption. And I'm not sure it's needed to organize something new than the Venice Commission, because it's a very important institution with representation from all the Member States, but also, of course, from others in the Council of Europe. But what we tried to do, and it was repeated in Reykjavik during the summit in the two last days, is the firm intention to organize the accession of the European Union to the European Convention of Human Rights. And with that, it will be possible to go to the European Court of Human Rights also concerning the European process and the European institutions. And that is very, very important. Last element, of course, we have our own rules about fundamental rights. You mentioned the Charter of Fundamental Rights. The Charter is binding since 10 years. At the beginning, it was not the case, but since 10 years, now, since 10 years, the Charter is binding, and it's possible, again, to enforce the different elements. And if I may, we have decided in the Commission to stop the process about the cohesion funds due to so-called enabling conditions, because there was not a full respect of the Charter of Fundamental Rights in Poland or in Hungary, and we are also in discussions on this. And my last remark is about what you said about Supreme Court, Constitutional Court. I was impressed by the fact that last year I have organized in November the first meeting with the European Court of Justice, the European Court of Human Rights, the two presidents, and the president of the Constitutional Court in Europe. But we don't have in all. We have 15 around with one council in France. We have Supreme Court doing the job, playing the same role, or other mechanisms. And I want to insist on the fact that following the treaties, it's possible to change, eh? But following the treaties, we don't ask to all the member states to have the same justice system. It's possible to have or not a Supreme Court, a Constitutional Court, and so on. But what we want to be sure that it's possible to have an independent justice system is the treaty, and to have an access to an independent judge is the Charter of Fundamental Rights. And that we try to build. But it's true that what is very important to conclude, and I'm trying to do that with you also today, is to have more and more exchanges between the national authorities. There are exchanges between the ministers in the Council, there are some exchanges in the European Parliament, But sometimes I have seen that there are not so much or so many exchanges between the highest authorities in the member states. The parliaments are trying to do that, but Constitutional Court or Supreme Court have some meeting, but not so much. And so I will organize again in November this year a new meeting with the European Court of Justice, the European Court of Human Rights, and the different constitutional court in Europe, because that's the most important element. But again, we don't ask to have the same justice system in all the European Union. We ask to have an independent justice system. And we have some rulings from the European Court of Justice, some rulings from the European Court of Human Rights, to explain what is it and to make a definition, to give a definition about the independence of the justice system. Now, I want to thank you for such an opportunity to exchange again with you. I want to say that you will see on the 5th of July our assessment about the implementation of the recommendations of last year. And I repeat what I've said to the members of the government this morning. It's very important to pay more and more attention to the implementation of the reforms and the fact that in the budgetary discussions there are enough resources, human resource, digital resource, to the different bodies involved in the different processes, because that's of the essence. And I know that the budgetary discussion, it's a difficult one in all the member states, like at the EU level.
Senhor Comissário, acho que foi uma hora bem utilizada sobre uma matéria que a todos mobiliza e que estou certo que todos consideramos que valeu a pena este encontro com o Sr. Comissário Didier Reynders. Portanto, quero por isso agradecer a todos, agradecer ao Sr. Comissário, a todos os colegas, à representação da Comissão Europeia em Portugal, e a Assembleia da República terá sempre as portas abertas para o Sr. Comissário sempre que nos queira visitar. Muito obrigado. Dou, portanto, encerrada a nossa reunião.